I'd like to thank Jan very much for inviting me to this meeting. It's all sorts of very interesting talks, and maybe some collaborations will come out of this. Well, as you probably realise, my title, The End of an Era, is a bit of a joke because Americans pronounce era as error. It may well be the end of an era, of an era as well. I will begin by my next slide. My first talk this morning mentioned this, that there's a physics is a certain problems. Let me just relate this to the question of time and change, because physics is about describing change or how things change from one time to another, so you can make predictions. Newton started it all with predictions of motions of planets, and then that theory was extended more and more till we got to the so-called standard model, which very nice theory. It's as people found more and more particles, they wanted to put them all in, and standard model did this, but with just a little problem, as you've heard about this morning, that you can't fit gravity into it. What can we do about that? Well, there are two approaches. What people have tried is what I describe as business as usual. You apply the same techniques. You do things like add extra dimensions. It seems you needed to have at least 10 or 11 dimensions to fit gravity in and stop the theory blowing up. And then a few tweaks, supersymmetry, and so on. Now, the problem with that is that it then stopped being physics. It more or less became nice, pure mathematics. The usual connection with the real world was rather lost. There are very few, the predictions that this theory does make haven't yet been confirmed by experiment, the so-called superparticles. They've not been found at all. Phenomena have been discovered, which you then have to fix the theory by hastily changing the theory. So it's not the nice kind of physics that one had with a standard model. And the alternative would be radical change, and that's what I'm talking about in my lecture today. What is this change? Well, one way of describing it is a new kind of order in science. So maybe not entirely new, but different from what we're familiar with. Can describe this as triadic organization, I'll explain in a minute, rather than usual dyadic. Now, I'm going to draw a diagram to explain that. One kind of organization we're familiar with, and again, my job has been done this morning as one of the lecturers talked about ordering in magnets. A magnet like iron is made out of lots of little magnets, and these interact and they tend to become parallel with each other. And if the temperature isn't too high, so there's not too much agitation, then you will get this ordering spreading out over a large distance. Now, this triadic organization is something rather more subtle than that, so subtle that it's not too clear how one can handle it, but there is nevertheless very good evidence that some different kind of organization is present. and this isn't really new, because the philosopher Charles Sanders Peirce, back in the 19th century, more or less talked about this kind of ordering. He talked about firstness, secondness, and thirdness. The way where three comes in is where the relationship between two entities is influenced by a third. So, before I get on to that, I'd just like to mention one factor which is important, which I mentioned in after one of the lectures in the comments, because something where there's a lot of argument about its relevance is the phenomenon of observation. And observation is something which gets into quantum mechanics very early on, because it turns out if you want to, well, it's a very funny kind of theory, quantum mechanics. It doesn't so much tell you what the world is, so perhaps it does that, but in order to interpret it, you have to interpret it in terms of observation. And there's a simple equation. Let me try the other one. Now pressing the right button, yes. This simple equation, where A represents what you're measuring, that's capital A, little a represents the result of a measurement, and there's this equation, psi is a wave function of a state of a system. This equation tells you, relates the measurement to the physics. It says that something called collapse occurs. The state of a system does this mathematical thing, collapsing to a special state and eigenvalue. The point, all you need to know about that equation is that it appears to say that observing the system changes it. And, well, you might say that's not very surprising. You'd expect your measurement instrument will interfere with it. But the important thing is that the change it makes depends on what you observe. You observe one thing and it changes another. The physicist John Archibald Wheeler, he wrote a very interesting article called Law Without Law, where he said this is very crucial. If you do lots of observations, then these may dramatically change the physics. And he went as far as saying that this observation process might create everything from nothing. But he didn't really go into detail as how it would work. It was just an idea and a proposal. One way one might go beyond that is to say, let's not talk about observation, the dry kind of measurement that the physicist makes. Let's talk about observation in real life. And we observe in real life to get some results. Our observation is functional. We look at the traffic because we want to be able to cross the road safely. So that's a rather intricate kind of process, and that kind of observation is something different. So you might expect that if you thought of that kind of observation, that might have novel implications. That in mind, let me get back to thirdness. As I said a little while back, thirdness means one entity is working on the relationship between two others. And this could alternatively be called integration, or getting two things to work together. And that is important because that's what happens when you develop. You start off being uncoordinated. Your stepping and your balancing don't work together when you walk. But as time goes on, you get things coordinated better until you have a single well-functioning process. So you can see, as far as development goes, that is an important thing. But it turns out that you have to make changes in a systematic manner. You have to know the significance of what's happening when you lose balance so you know what to do about it. So this is a systematic process, and you develop, you do your integration by using feedback. And this is basically what happens as you develop, get older, get all sorts of capacities. You're just trying to put various systems together and learning how to put things together properly, and there's a cumulative integration process. A student of mine, the original George Osborne, actually, no relation as far as I know, he actually did a computer simulation of this, which you can find on my web pages if you look at the publication link. Unfortunately, we couldn't take it any further than a very simple simulation of how balance started. But anyway, that seems to be what happens, seems to be important. Let me just say that this feedback is used in two ways. You're using feedback all the time when you're doing things, but this is a special kind of feedback which is responsible for development. My thesis is that this process I've just described underlies all of developments. You have lots of components, and these components look after each other, see how they're performing, and this may be responsible for all of development. Everything, if you got things to the right kind of model, that would explain it all. An important feature of this would be a kind of selection process. You'd have to have as part of this process that the things which didn't do very well got eliminated. So you get better and better processes and come to some kind of equilibrium. So this is the kind of new kind of order or organization that proposing is behind all of this. And I was very interested in Julian's talk this morning because he seems to be finding this sort of thing in his simulations. I can see a lot of parallels, and maybe if you looked under the surface there, you would see the kind of cognitive developments that I'm talking about. So this is a new kind of spontaneous organization that we're I'm proposing. But you might say, well, why should we believe any of this? It's just hand-waving. Well, I think it's a very good argument for saying, before I go into this, let me say that this line of research was stimulated by the second person I mentioned earlier on. There's Charles Sanders Peirce talked about something very similar. His thirdness did various things like relating signs and what signs refer to their objects. And he said there seems to be some other process which he called the interpretant, or other system that he called the interpretant, which would connect the two. So you would need that third element. Alexa Yardley is somebody who contacted me a few years ago with her ideas, and my assessment at this stage is that she had some intuitive picture of how all this would work, but in view of its subtleties, she had problems explaining it, and her method, I think one would have to say, is like the Zen koan. She would make some mysterious statement like every line is the diameter of a circle, which one was left to understand the meaning of. Eventually, I understood that the line refers to two systems which have a link. They exchange information, and becoming a circle is turning into a unit. And so the connection between the two is the process I talked about earlier. And so there's lots of systematics there. She has a book called Circular Theory explaining it all. That's how this developed. And may not have realized it without these strange coins which were presented to me. As I said, you might think, well, this it's all very well to say things build up in this way. But something which shows that this really does happen is the phenomenon of language. Now, language, when you think about it, is a very peculiar phenomenon because we learn a language. I'm using English now. This is an elaborate language. It has a large vocabulary, but it also has a grammar. Without the grammar, things would be very confused.
as we know, when you misinterpret something there, the grammar wasn't quite doing its job, but grammar is playing a subtle role in connecting words with meaning. And this mysteriously comes into existence. There was a time when the English language didn't exist, or any language. And then over time, people made some kind of sounds, and they gradually understood each other, and language built up step by step. So you see, it's the same kind of thing same kind of mechanism I'm talking about, and has these amazing consequences. Of course, you may argue as to whether it really, that's really all that's needed. One argument which you may or may not, I'll go into this slide to make my point. This is an amazingly complicated thing, and as we all know, complicated things tend to break down. Language doesn't, and probably the reason why language works so well is that at its basis it's really very simple. There's a simple mechanism that you're putting parts together and seeing how well this worked. If there's anything more complicated than that, language would probably just not work very well. Well, you may or may not like that argument, but I think it will turn out that that's basically what's involved in language. A way you might like to think about this is this is a bit like solving a jigsaw puzzle. It's like we have a collection of parts we can use, and you're putting the parts together. You put them together to see how they work, and the experienced jigsaw puzzler has clues which assist putting together parts correctly. They assist the search, which is what I'm suggesting is a part of this ordering process. Okay. But there's one difference which may be the crucial thing which makes the turns the dyadic into a triadic, in that we're talking about processes over time, and that seems to make things much more elaborate. we can sort of see what how this works. I'm giving the example of rock climbing. Now, rock climbing is something where you have to fit two things together. Your nervous system is doing some computation to compute what you should do, and unless what you compute fits the reality, in other words, unless the mental and physical fit together, then you would have problems. So what's going on is that you do simple problems first, and then you find out what mechanism is needed to coordinate them, then go into more complicated rock climbing problems, and you add another bit of system to that, and some fairly advanced tricks are produced in this way, complex systems. You can use these to solve similar problems and so on. So that's this fitting together, getting more and more elaborate parts is what the proposal is what's involved. Okay. Well, now to get on to the more dramatic part of my proposals, I've only told you about one part of language so far, because every child is born with some mechanisms specialized to language, the so-called language acquisition devices. These are the things which know what to look for, as it were. So how did these come into existence? The answer is you've got two timescales. You could say there are language system users, and there's language system evolution. Individual language speakers develop over a comparatively short timescale, number of years, whereas the language system probably developed over a much longer period. and the way the users develop, they assess how well the system that they have is working for them in their communications, and thereby develop their systems. Whereas system development essentially assesses how well the system works for users in general. I'm talking about probably the ordinary evolution by natural selection. Originally, the language system started off as something very simple. Then some mutation improved it, so you got a better system. There was selection in favor of that better system. And then from that, you could build on a still better system. There's a book by Jackendorf, what it's called on language, which sort of explains language in these terms. Okay, so let me sketch this in a diagram. here are the two time scales. As far as language is concerned, the individual has a short time scale, and the species develops a system which individuals use. So a sort of flow from the system, from the species. The individual is informed by what the species have, and the species are developing, and the individuals are making use of that development. Okay, well, I'm going to take that general theme and see where it takes us. And I want to talk about mathematics. Because mathematics presents an interesting puzzle, just as language does. Penrose has talked about this quite a bit. Now let me just say what mathematics is in terms of the kind of scheme I've talked about. It's really, language plays a part of it, but it's a special kind of language, specialized kind of language. It comes about through what you could call cumulative reflection on patterns. You first see a pattern and you invent a description that describes it. Then you find that there are patterns in that world of description, and so you describe those patterns, and so it goes. A simple illustration of this is numbers. Numbers 1, 2, 3, and so on represent the pattern that are single objects, pairs of objects, and so on. And it's useful to produce a language which distinguishes between having one of something, two of something, and so on. It's also useful to invent plus. You put two things together with two things, and you get four. So plus comes out naturally there. Well, then you find there's a pattern, various patterns, like in terms of algebraic notation, x plus y equals y plus x. So that's seeing a pattern in the language that you develop to describe patterns. That gets you from arithmetic to algebra. So there's a special cumulative process which, in essence, gives you mathematics. Well, now there's a puzzle, and this is the kind of puzzle to which Penrose drew attention. You could say there's an observational side or experimental side to mathematics and an insightful side. Now, I talk about observation as a kind which was popular in schools the time when my daughter was in school. I don't know if it's still like that. You find out about mathematics by doing research into numbers, and I suppose finding out that 2 plus 3 equals 3 plus 2 might be something like that. Anyway, there's some mathematical facts you find out by just seeing that they apply. It's just like scientists doing experiments. But there's also mathematical insight, and that's the peculiar thing, that mathematicians have a kind of feel for what is right and not, and this guides them towards developing mathematics. You may feel that you've got a new result, and then you play around to see if you can prove it. And the question is, where does this come from? In fact, it's not clear that we evolved to be able to do mathematics. Mathematics doesn't help us in ordinary life, even though modern technology it does. So where did it come from? Well, we can take something like the model I looked before, and suggest that just as we had species evolution to develop a system which individuals could use, we have another system of some kind, which we can call the Platonic realm, and some individuals can tune into that realm, which is unlikely to have come about through natural selection because, as I said, well, clearly natural selection can explain why our language systems get better and better, but it doesn't explain why we get better and better at mathematical insight. So this Platonic realm may be something different. And this may be relevant to physics, as we'll see in the next diagram. Anyway, the idea is that this is some aspect of the physical universe which has existed for a very long time and has been longer than our universe. So there's a much greater time scale, which I guess is indicated by this diagram here, which has been able to acquire mathematics and also to get rather good at its experimental mathematics. It says it knows more about whether a given theorem is true or not, though it's unclear exactly how it would work. Well, it's an argument for the this Platonic realm, but then it might, if this thing can be good at mathematics, it can also have learnt to do other things, and it may have also learnt to do universes. So, a picture more or less, let me sketch this out. There's a sort of well-confirmed physics where we have our theories fit the experiment nicely, and there's this questionable area that I talked about at the beginning. So the proposal is that this questionable area isn't just business as usual. It's more the kind of thing I've been talking about. It has this complicated organization, and this is the source of this confirmed physics. These possibly higher entities have a different kind of reality to us, and they play at making universes and so on. We have some contact with us through mathematical insight and perhaps through inspiration of other kinds, and they may be directing our ordinary universe. I'm going to want to say this is a taboo subject because it sounds a bit like intelligent design. But before I go on to that political aspect, I'd like to give another illustration. It's actually the first Tucson consciousness conference 20 years ago. I've been collaborating with a musician. I was a musicologist. Said, is it funny? Well, in fact, my consciousness had just been getting to the point where music seemed meaningful to me and not just interesting sounds. And I asked what musicians thought about this, and she referred to me to the book by Suzanne Langer, Philosophy in a New Key, which is all about two kinds of symbols, the symbols that scientists use which denote things, and symbols which are for our minds and they have connotations. So I started thinking about this and wondered what you might derive from this. The puzzle then is why particular patterns have these special effects. And neither she nor I were very convinced by what people had written about this, trying to explain it. This sort of something springs on you unexpectedly or something, that's what good music is, which hardly seems to explain why you have to have it just right. This is a paper you can see on my web pages, again if you follow the publications link and then to music. Now I have some note about it. Uh, Well, one thing you can say when you analyze what's going on is that there are certain fertile patterns. There's evidence for this if you look at the kind of things musicians write. One composer may use the ideas of another. They seem to be recyclable. So you have to show the why there are these fertile patterns which can be used to create music. You say they are... some adaptive mechanism, some mechanism which supports life and perhaps supports thought. But anyway, it's something happening in the mind. The question is, which mind are these patterns fertile for? And we discarded the traditional explanations that they are for the individual mind. And the reason is for discarding that is that it isn't just one person that finds a pattern powerful. The same pattern works for many people. So it's something beyond the individual that's working there. You might think it's cultural. Well, a lot of music is cultural, but that wouldn't explain why somebody can suddenly come up with a new kind of music which gets accepted by a culture. So that obviously has not come from a culture because it was invented. So we said this could come from some more universal mind and a Platonic mind. So there seems to be a certain amount of evidence that there is this questionable thing actually involves something more mind-like than just a simple piece of mathematics, which couldn't do anything fancy. Julian Barber's talk this morning encourages me to think that you can actually work with this, because he's found similar things coming out of computer simulations. Of course, you could try the same with language, but his models, which assume only systems interacting under gravity, show that various interesting things happen, and it's quite likely that when you looked into the details, you would find structures forming. Well, he mentioned structures forming, and you may very well find that they conform with this thirdness idea. So this is another direction from which they have been discovered. It's also a curious thing which has been discovered by people working in computation, quantum mechanics recently, something called quantum discord, which I think is misnamed. I think it should be called quantum harmony. But that, I haven't studied it in detail, but what I do know about it is that it's something that goes beyond quantum entanglement, which is a mysterious connection between two systems. It's something which works on a much broader scale and is more stable, and that may also be connected with this thirdness. One of our group, Alex Hankey, has been looking into how one may be able to connect it with physics, things like chaos and so on, how that would enter into this kind of picture. Okay, well, now the political thing. This is a taboo subject. People have had their academic careers terminated for promoting ideas similar to these I've been talking about. There's a YouTube video about this called Not Forbidden, No Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. It's somewhat extreme because compared to Hitler, which perhaps is a bit extreme. But anyway, it shows what's happened to people who've started saying, there may be something to intelligent design. This is a sort of more scientific approach in the spirit of physics. Started off by saying there's this apparent kind of organization which goes beyond what I call dyadic organization, what you get in ferromagnets. And it appears that language operates according to this kind of principle. So it's an illustration of these principles at work. There are some computer simulations which may, such as those you've heard earlier today, which may also provide a basis for it. So in other words, it is not completely crazy. It's in the tradition of theoretical physics, one might say. Also, interestingly, it has connections with Eastern philosophy. So I think much effort ought to be put into seeing what we have there. Now, I'll just finish by thanking some of my collaborators. Alex Hankey's been working on connections with quantum mechanics, well, with conventional physics, and how things like critical phenomena may come into this. Example, critical phenomena tend to produce simple mathematics. Madan Thangavelu, who's expert in Indian philosophy, and tells us, oh, it's really this, and there's some strange things he's mentioned, some strange mechanisms which we may eventually be able to connect. And Plamen Semyonov, some time ago he contacted me in regard to a project he's been developing. His argument is that a lot of the ideas we have at the moment don't really work for biology, so can we produce a kind of mathematics that's more suitable for biology? And there have been various conferences on this, and there's a white paper. Actually, if you look, search on that word in BIOSA, you'll find the white paper, which is all the ideas that people have produced on how you might make a new kind of mathematics suitable for biology. And I'd also like to thank you for listening. So thank you very much.